Good afternoon and welcome to Designing Cyber Recovery Strategies for Today's Data Heavy Enterprise, a Health System CIO Media Inc. production sponsored by Pure Storage. Just a little housekeeping before we get started. My name is Anthony Guerra. I'm the founder and editor-in-chief of Health System CIO, and I'll be your moderator today. We're looking forward to your participation. You can send in your questions or comments at any time in the Q&A box, and we'll take them later in the program. Just so you see how we're going to spend our time today, first we're going to go about 40 minutes with our main panel discussion featuring Adam Zoller, CISO with Providence, Sanjeev Sah, System VP, IT Strategy and Cyber with CommonSpirit Health, and John Kimberly, Director, Global Healthcare Strategic Alliances with Pure Storage. And then we will have our Q&A. So let's jump right in. Adam, let's start with you. Can you give us an overview of your organization and your role?
Yeah, absolutely. So Providence, we're a healthcare system out on the West Coast of the U.S. We have 52 hospitals and over 1,000 clinics with about 120,000 full-time caregivers and another 120-ish thousand non-employed caregivers as part of our organization. So fairly massive healthcare system. I lead cybersecurity for the organization. And if you look at our cyber organization and compare it to industry standard, you know, NIST cybersecurity framework, it pretty much it matches up one for one with what you would expect a CISO organization to have. Things like identity access management, security operations and engineering, governance, risk and compliance, and then all the supporting functions, communications, training, awareness, and strategy.
All right. Excellent, Adam. Thank you. Sanjeev?
Yeah, Anthony, thank you for having me. Good to be with this group. I work for CommonSpirit Health, one of the nation's largest health systems with 150 hospitals, over 2,000 clinics, and 150,000 caregivers. My role is System Vice President for Cyber Vigilance and Defense at CommonSpirit Health. I'm a member of the cyber leadership team. In my organization, I'm responsible for things like incident response, cyber defense, attack surface management, among other functions. We work collaboratively with other cyber units, as well as IT and both internal and external stakeholders to do what is necessary from a cybersecurity and cyber defense perspective. Again, thanks for having me and good to be here.
Excellent. Very good. John.
Yes. John Kimberly with Pure Storage and Pure Storage software, hardware manufacturer, to making solutions wherever your data lives, whether that's in the public cloud or on-prem or anywhere in between, but very focused on outcomes, speed, reducing the TCO, reliability, resiliency, energy usage. So that's Pure Storage. And at Pure, my role on the health and life sciences team, been with Pure about 4 years, and focus on providers, alliances, and solutions. But before Pure, spent 30 years on the provider side for a large organization, but not near as large as Providence or CommonSpirit. It was a 4-state, 30 hospital system, had several senior IT roles, including in the CIO chair for a bit. So glad to be here and looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, John, it's funny. It's hard to make a 30 hospital system seem small, but our two friends have done it today.
They just did it.
They did it. All right, very good. Let's jump right in. Adam, we're going to start with you. Let's set the table for our discussion by talking about the allocation of IT security resources. How do you decide how much or many resources to focus on defense and prevention versus recovery and BCP? What I'm trying to understand here is you know, what is the process of sort of laying out the spending? Are there buckets that you divide things into? Is that a helpful paradigm or construct for when you're figuring out how to allocate the money you have for cyber? So we'll start with that. And then the next question, we're going to drill down more from there. But at a high level, do you split it up between sort of defense on the one end and then recovery on the other end?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think, you know, you're going to ask, you know, you ask five different organizations that question, you're going to get five very different answers. I think the general rule is between 6% and 8% of IT budget should be devoted at a minimum to cybersecurity and, or at least IT risk reduction. If you look at different benchmarks, though, you're going to get different answers on that. But generally speaking, if you trust the Gartners, Foresters of the world, that's the rule of thumb there. What I would say is, again, it varies greatly by organization. It varies greatly by the risk posture of the organization, the threat landscape that that organization operates within, and your own organization's risk tolerance for things like IT risk or IT service disruptions due to cyber events. From a defense prevention or recovery or BCP perspective, I think, you know, what I always fall back on is cybersecurity strategy rooted in capability maturity assessment according to an industry standard model, like a NIST cybersecurity framework analysis, that where you can take that quantitative and qualitative data and then come to the conclusions about how much you're, how little you need to invest in different areas like network defense or business continuity planning and disaster recovery. What I would say is, you know, if you look at specifically business continuity planning and disaster recovery, the elements of business continuity planning obviously incorporate elements of IT, but business continuity planning shouldn't only be an IT exercise. In fact, I think if you take it up a level in an organization, it should really be owned by your organization, your organization's chief risk officer, who should look at business continuity planning in terms of what are the business processes that are critical to our organization, what processes align to or capabilities align to those lines of business. And then as the next layer down, what then IT assets or IT applications or IT processes align to those business processes in a risk ranked fashion so that you can then as an IT organization start to talk about what's the business impact assessment for a particular application and what are the measures that we need to put in place to protect that application or ensure that it can be recovered in the event of an emergency. So I think high level, question about resources, there's no one size fits all. There are some benchmarks that you can use, but really it comes down to your own organization's maturity and your risk tolerance. And that should be a collaborative conversation that happens not just within IT, but also outside.
Very good. Sanjeev, your thoughts?
Yeah, Adam, thank you for insightful perspective on this question. I think what I would add is that it should be an informed decision by following a particular strategy and steps for determining what organizations should invest in business continuity and disaster recovery. So for example, a risk assessment ought to be performed to determine the standing in terms of where the organization stands from a BCP perspective, you know, perform a cost benefit analysis for what if an event took place, what is the likelihood, what is the probability, and what do we want to then invest to safeguard operations, for example. Look at regulatory and compliance requirements that are upon us. Have a business impact analysis. And then when we talk about resource allocation, the strategy should really take into account a couple of things from a BCP perspective. One aspect is about defense and prevention, right? So the examples would be technology investments from cyber perspective to one, safeguard technologies and operations, but also improve cybersecurity posture. And then risk mitigation strategy, training and awareness would also be components of that. But when we think about purely from a recovery and BCP perspective, examples of investments, depending on our organization, might be in the areas of data backup, recovery systems, or emergency response plans, facility preparedness. And essentially what Adam also shared with us, right, which is really it needs to be a collaborative approach among IT, cyber, and business stakeholders to determine what investments should be made for a given organization. And that's the type of protocol and process we follow for ourselves. And I think that's what I would advise and suggest organizations do to determine what investment they should make for their organizations on in this particular perspective.
Sanjeev, quick follow-up, because you mentioned, I think you were used the word defense a lot in your title and describing your work. So is that put you in a particular area of the cyber work, the defense as opposed to the response?
In fact, it's both, right? So in cyber, we use a lot of terminologies that can sometimes be very confusing. But for us, cyber defense essentially is a function where we have vigilance in terms of monitoring of cyber events and threats, right? And then response protocols based on that. And so my team is in charge of incident response, forensics and investigations, but also managing attack surface across the enterprise. And so it's a number of different functions that come together to provide for what we generally would call cyber defense.
Okay, very good. John, your thoughts on what you're hearing?
Very little to add, except, you know, obviously, Sanjeev and Adam are working for, you know, in the cyber area. I work for a, storage company that is heavily prevalent within the healthcare industry. So in my role, I get to speak with a lot of healthcare IT leaders. So some of the insights are more crowdsourced, but, you know, clearly some of the events over the past 3 to 4 years, there is, you know, while there is this balanced approach and a risk-based approach, we are seeing a lot more kind of modernization or refreshing of the recovery area. So, you know, multi-day restores are not necessarily best practice. And so there is, you know, a wider interest in both modernizing the recovery and adding in resiliency.
So what are the requests coming in, John? What do they want? Like in terms of recovery, when healthcare organizations are coming to you, having discussions with you, you said multi-day is not really going to work for them. So when they're coming in having these discussions, what are they saying is the recovery they want to see ideally?
I mean, you're looking at, you know, zero's the best, but, you know, within a few hours is a lot more reasonable than several days. So, you know, I'm thinking of several examples where we had, you know, instances of 18-hour backups, multi-day restores, 3 or 4 day restores. And we're really just talking about the main operational database for the electronic health record, not even the whole ecosystem that may be required for recovery. But, you know, in those instances, you know, that's a long recovery time. It's drifted there over time. And they're looking to, you know, drop that into a single hour, under 4 hours or better.
And so they come to you and they say something like that. We're currently feel like we're in a multi-day situation. We want to go down to 4 hours. And then you work on a strategy with them as far as your role, whatever you can do to help them. And you say, here's how we can get you there. And here are the changes that need to make. And probably here are the costs that are going to change for you.
Exactly. And you know, it's a, multi-component solution. So there's, you know, all parts to the stack, but yes, accelerating the actual storage and multi-threading it will increase the throughput.
All right. Very good. All right. This is a little more drill down and we'll see if we can get any more or if we've already covered it all. Sanjeev, let's start with you. We could certainly get to some more here. So when we talk about this is a huge, huge issue of business continuity, and it's a very interesting issue because it's not black and white and it's not simple. What I find the most interesting in this discussion is it's the leadership question, because, you know, whenever we talk about collaboration is when I feel a little uncomfortable. When we say, well, we're all in it together and we're going to collaborate and everybody's going to do it together, I'm like, well, in my experience in my whole life, when nobody's in charge, absolutely owning it, nothing gets done. Now, we could talk about possibly, and Adam, you kind of mentioned this, maybe emergency management is what you were alluding to, because that's, or a chief risk officer you mentioned. So it's someone outside of IT that can then make sure IT is included, and IT can make sure IT security is included. But someone's got to own it. And if you sort of say, well, the CISO is going to own the security part of it. Well, they're not going to make sure that there's paper forms that are ready to go when we have to shut down the technology in this clinical department. We're not doing that. So at some point, the other side's got to take over. But you may want to make sure they understand that they're going to need to do that. It's a lot of stuff there. So, Sanjeev, your thoughts on what I want to know is, for the IT security leader like yourself, how far, where do you want to drive the train, be in charge? What do you want to make sure is done? And then where do you need to collaborate and encourage and say, hey, you might want to think about this, you might want to think about that? So those kind of things. Sanjeev, let's start with you.
Yeah, again, a very deep question there, Anthony. But, you know, when we talk about collaboration and partnership in organization as complex as Common Spirit Health or Adams Organization and others out there, you know, leadership is about collaborating with internal stakeholders and then determining just the right model for a couple of different things that we're trying to address in this conversation. There's a topic of emergency management, right? But there's a topic also of cyber resilience. And somewhere in between, we're talking about business continuity and disaster recovery. None of these things can happen in a silo. You know, each part of these topics requires leadership, right? Where cyber leadership can play a really important role is in this space that we're talking about, cyber resilience, and then taking it further in terms of business continuity and disaster recovery plans. So let me peel that further in terms of stakeholders and partnerships. Really, I think cyber resilience is clearly something cyber should lead. Lead with IT stakeholders as well as business stakeholders. And that can include, you know, CIOs, that can include CFOs, that can include security leaders, that can include business unit leaders and department heads, HR managers, legals and compliance, and even external stakeholders like law enforcement, be it local police or FBI and others. So in terms of partnerships, depending on the topic and depending on which element of that topic, it can really be extensive stakeholder involvement. But I think your question was also getting to, so from business continuity perspective, where should we lead and where should we focus? And there are certain elements to include, right? When we think about from a business continuity perspective, the fact that we should perform risk assessments, the fact that we should conduct business impact analysis, there should be some continuity planning. This should be emergency resource planning, resource management, communications in relation to business continuity, training and awareness, you know, conducting testing and having exercises to practice them, having documentation that you can act on, right? Each of these items require the partnerships that I highlighted, and partnerships then should translate into documented plans and tested plans for what should exactly happen from a response perspective, what and who will play the types of role that we should be playing in that response. And then with clarity, communications mechanisms, especially during emergency situations, because the clarity and practice really provides the kind of advance response that our organizations can really benefit from. So I'll pause there to see if my colleagues would want to offer additional insights, and then, of course, I can expand further.
All right, fantastic. John, any thoughts there on what you're hearing and what you've been hearing again from customers and prospects?
Yes. So as Sanjeev was talking, I recently was at a healthcare chief data officer summit, and the CDO is a relatively new role, but you know, they're talking about data literacy within their organization. And, you know, the corollary to that, of course, in the security context is, you know, beyond just awareness and training, you know, leaders, whether they're at the board, C-suite, or at the director level, you know, participating in the cybersecurity, the business continuity, whatever aspect of security, it isn't the job of the the cybersecurity leader, although they are going to be leading it. But really, you know, we're seeing some evolvement of the need for, you know, throughout the organization for people to participate appropriately, as opposed to just, letting the cybersecurity folks deal with it. And it really is the responsibility of all. Just like you would have a department director within a healthcare system, you would expect them to manage their budget, have some basic, financial skills to manage their budget. There are some basic skills when it comes to, business continuity, disaster recovery, and other aspects of prevention. So definitely an area that we're seeing a lot more discussions.
Very good, Adam. Again, it's the lead follow thing for me. That's really my question about this stuff. For example, a CISO might look at the business continuity posture of the organization, and they might bother to analyze it and say, well, I see some holes, or it doesn't look as strong as it could be, but these aren't really my areas. It's a little bit out of my wheelhouse, but as an executive of the company, I want to help. So maybe I'll put out some feelers and say, hey, I know this isn't your area, but I don't know. Adam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that's the way a lot of conversations are happening right now within companies that, historically, up until about 4 or 5 years ago, I haven't had to think about continuity of business in terms of catastrophic loss of IT assets and data. So a lot of, I think, business leaders are looking to cybersecurity leaders to guide some of those conversations, because we've seen these attacks go on for some time and we're familiar with the intricacies of how they happen. What I will say is, taking a step back, though, I mean, on the leadership conversation, I think it's important to have conversations before you run into an incident about who's responsible, who's accountable, who's consulted, who's informed, as it pertains to continuity of business planning. And continuity of business planning is a much higher level, broader topic than a cybersecurity or an IT organization, I think, can tackle. Yeah. This is a conversation that really needs to be led by and owned by operations. It needs to be led and owned in part by your finance organization, really at the CEO level. And emergency preparedness, emergency response as a part of business continuity needs to include elements of how do you respond to cyber incidents. But it also needs to include elements of how do you respond to earthquakes and wildfires and other natural disasters, or frankly, catastrophic financial events that can happen and impact your business as well. So business continuity planning, to me, again, should incorporate elements of cybersecurity. I think we're being consulted to lead some of those conversations, given, I think, the risk area that we focus on. But cybersecurity in no way, shape, or form should own business continuity for a business. I think that's a bit of the tail wagging the dog. I would say the human aspects, training, education, and awareness about business continuity planning, and probably bringing in a third party to lead some of those conversations if your organization isn't already having those conversations about what right looks like in a fully mature business continuity program would be a good move. On the technology front, obviously looking at your lines of business, plugging your technology functions and risk functions into your business continuity planning process, and then having the resiliency in your tech stack to absorb the different scenarios that are identified in the business continuity planning process is paramount. So that should include elements like having immutable offline backups that are MFA protected. It should include elements of having failover capability for what you deem to be your critical applications that support the lines of business that are critical, that are identified as critical by your operations function. But again, business continuity planning to me is, it shouldn't be owned by cyber, but it should, to your point, be owned by somebody. And I think that somebody should be either operations or risk or a combination of both.
And Adam, just as a follow-up, it sounds like it's okay, or maybe even worthwhile. Maybe as a cyber leader, you see holes in the business continuity plan, or there are certain things you understand about risk and certain flows, and the Change Healthcare situation comes to mind. That took a certain insight, and I wrote a little bit about this, from what I gleaned of the situation, but that took some insight. They had a lot of nuances to it where there was a lot of risk there that may not have been just super obvious if you weren't kind of thinking about it.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. I think the Change Healthcare incident was an eye-opener for a lot of organizations that historically haven't had to think about business continuity planning, because it really was a business continuity event for the Change Healthcare customers. But business continuity planning in terms of what are the critical vendors that we rely upon to deliver critical services that run our business. And that obviously from a cybersecurity side of the house, I can speak personally about my own involvement. I was involved with those conversations with our revenue cycle organization and with our pharmacy organization, the organizations that were impacted by Change Healthcare, and updating them on, you know, length of time, my projected or my thoughts on what's the length of time it's going to take Change Healthcare to respond based on what I know about these types of cyber events. But fundamentally, that Change Healthcare incident was a conversation about, do we want to put all of our eggs in one basket in the future in one particular vendor? Or do we now use this as a to generate momentum, to have conversations about where do we have critical single points of failure from a vendor landscape perspective, not just on the IT side of the house, but vendor landscape. And how do we as an organization choose to address that in a fashion that puts us ahead of the next Change Healthcare incident?
Yeah. Anthony, if I can just add a bit more here, listening to Adam articulate, you know, how he has been involved. There are a couple of things that I think it's worth taking note about. One, that we are really interconnected with lots of partners and suppliers in our modern day business construct. Internally, we are equally complex in terms of IT of things and also business processes that our organizations rely on. And these complexities, you know, give rise to the need for having a good understanding of not just the business processes and systems that we rely on for functioning of our organizations and caring for people, but also how do we sustain this operation? How do we protect them? How do we safeguard it? And what should be our business continuity plans if something was to occur? We can learn from hospital systems, and hospitals have had emergency management plans for some time. It just hasn't included cyber or IT BCP as optimized as we've had for other types of scenarios that facilities can experience. And so in my own experience, what we've been able to do is champion the cause without owning it, right? Championing the cause to say, to your question, Anthony, you said, you know, there's this gap that you identify. What do you do about it? Well, it's, you know, our job is to, you know, champion when you see a gap, work with partners within the organization, depends on, you know, what the gap is, and then work towards that resilience that we talked about. And what does resilience really mean from a cyber perspective or technology perspective? It's things that we've been talking about, having a good backup, having an ability to recover during an incident, knowing who should be part of a conversation when you do have an event. How do you communicate? What are the primary systems that we need to bring back versus what we might think is the most important, right? All of these things and components are really articulated in good business continuity and disaster recovery plans. So I think I really loved your question in terms of how do you then champion the cause when you don't have existing ownership. And I think it's upon us, given our size, complexity, and prominence in the marketplace in an industry in terms of who we care for, that we go ahead and champion those causes when we see a vacuum.
I think that's brilliantly said. And that's what I think that phrase is what I've been trying to express the concern around, to champion the cause without owning it, because I just feel like cyber leaders have visibility into this critical problem that others don't, but they don't want to own it, and they shouldn't own it, to Adam's point. So what you talked about, championing it without owning it, that's the art, and that's where you need sort of political savvy to approach these conversations in the proper way with the proper people. John, anything you want to jump in there? If not, you know,
Remembering the chief medical information officer that I was paired with for a long time, used to talk about, you know, theoretical risk is infinite, And I think in the past 3 to 5 years, things have changed a little bit within healthcare. And we have had seen, you know, we have seen what a large scale outage looks like. And the hope, and I think we are seeing it, is those, the silver lining on those incidents is that it's informing us, it's informing the process, it's giving us, real world examples to focus on. And that clearly, you know, theoretical risk is different than, you know, you have experience, direct experience with these types of events. The entire broad spectrum, not just the events, but the outage, the partners, the incident response, all that together should inform and help us make better investment decisions.
John, I'm going to ask you a question, and then I'm going to go around to everybody, because it's just something that occurred to me. And I did an interview the other day, and the concept was that everyone should be trying to move towards simplicity in their IT environment in general. That's what you want to do. That's why there's a big push for application rationalization. It's that kind of direction. It just seems to me the complexities of these environments from an IT point of view are so phenomenal that we don't know where that that thread is that's ready to snap. There's threads there. It was there before change. It was the, let's call it the change thread. Nobody saw it, or maybe if we did, nobody was ready to deal with it. There's other threads like that all over the place. We don't see them yet. And maybe it's too complex to find them until they happen, which is scary. But yep. John, I'm going to throw that fun question out to you.
I mean, I attend a lot of innovation events within healthcare and get to talk to leaders. And I still think the most innovative thing, activity, or that we can do is to eliminate waste within our environments. And clearly, in a contemporary large healthcare IT organization, the portfolio is too big. There's, hundreds of applications, and there's legacy data that's still being spun up. So, clearly just simplifying the portfolio will give our security professionals, less area, less things to protect. So, clearly, there's a significant opportunity to simplify and rationalize the portfolio. You know, hardware, software, applications, simple is more reliable, and it allows you to make sure you're protecting more of your assets. So, yeah.
Go ahead.
Just still a very, very strong IT strategy is to simplify.
Right, right. So, Sanjeev, Two things. Number one is you mentioned that part of your job has to do with the attack surface, which is ever expanding continually, exponentially, and your job is to keep an eye on that or perhaps prevent it from growing. The other thing is, though I mentioned application rationalization as a goal, and it's everybody I talk to who tries it says it's extremely difficult to get rid of applications once they're in and they've been used to any degree. So your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think, John, your response, I really liked it, because it was getting to the simplification. And that's what application rationalization tries to do, right? You do it for multiple reasons. One, you're able to use platform strategy for common solutions, and where you simplify the architecture, you simplify business processes that can be supported by a common platform. And then from a cyber perspective, it's one applications versus 10 different ones or multiple different ones you're trying to provide safeguards and controls for. So that's one aspect of application rationalization that's immensely helpful from cybersecurity and protections perspective, but also from a resilience perspective. When we think of attack surface management, again, we're looking to reduce the opportunities in terms of cyber gaps and cyber vulnerabilities, right? And so it gives us an opportunity to be able to reduce that, and reducing the attack surface also translates into a reduced opportunity for threats and vulnerabilities. So I think both strategies, while very different from each other, definitely lend towards a better cybersecurity posture if executed in a way that you can improve cybersecurity controls and cybersecurity visibility and cybersecurity posture. So I'll pause there and happy to expand. But I'd love to hear what Adam or John may add to your question there, Anthony.
Yeah, I would just jump in and say, you know, simplification is, it should be a core tenet of your IT strategy. If it's not, for some time now, Providence has had an IT strategy set by my CIO, my boss, BJ Moore, around simplification, modernization, and innovation in our IT stack. And obviously that trickles down into the cybersecurity approach as well. You know, simplification can be a cost reduction driver. Simplification can be a security driver as well, as Sanjeev and John have mentioned. What I would just say, though, is generally speaking, in a large hospital system, we have options to simplify, but we can't simplify our environment to the point where we reduce or eliminate IT risk. And so what I've found is that, you know, I mean, if you look at the attacks that have happened across our landscape over the last several years, they all have a lot of things in common. I mean, it's focusing on the basics. I mean, you're going to eliminate a lot of the opportunity for attacks by focusing on, do I have multi-factor authentication on everything that's web-facing? Am I doing appropriate attack surface management, like vulnerability management and patch management on my web-facing ecosystem? Am I modernizing my applications, my systems, to the point where they can utilize modern authentication and security protocols? And, you know, obviously simplification, there's a direct thread of simplification through all those themes and concepts. But, you know, do I have appropriate coverage of my network defense technology stack across my entire ecosystem? Is everybody following our security policies and practices to the letter of the law as a minimum? You know, and if you see a lot of the attacks that are happening, it's internet exposed remote access capabilities that aren't being patched or aren't being managed that have single factor authentication in place. It's, you know, lack of patching rigor, lack of identity management rigor in your internal ecosystem. I think simplification, you know, shouldn't just be looked at in terms of IT assets or applications. It also has to apply through to how you manage your identities, your core foundational elements of what we call in the security industry your zero trust approach. And what I mean by that is a lot of these attacks that we're seeing in the industry today could be mitigated or completely avoided by vaulting and rotating privilege in your environment, privileged credentials in your environment as just one failure mode. So yeah, I think simplification is absolutely important. It's not going to be the silver bullet though for the healthcare industry, because unfortunately in our industry, we're incredibly reliant on third parties to do the right thing. And what we see in the case of Change Healthcare and other third parties, Change Healthcare isn't a unique instance, unfortunately, or a unique vendor in our vendor landscape. We're seeing failures of the basics that lead to risks on their customer side that we then have to deal with as a business continuity problem. And, I honestly think, again, Change Healthcare is just one data point in a sea of data points that I've at least observed over the last several years.
So, Adam, it sounds like what you're saying is there are some things we talked about, like application rationalization, simplification. There's some things that are worthwhile, but they're hard and they involve a lot of collaboration. And I don't know how quickly or fast we're going to move the needle in those areas. But there's a whole bunch of other stuff that we can do right within our IT security realm. This is our stuff. We can execute it, bread and butter. And so much of it is not being done properly or well in other organizations. Get this stuff right and then work on the other stuff. But you can't.
Yeah. Right? You know, you have to risk prioritize what you're doing with limited resources in your IT security organization. And that should include some elements of, what are the highest risk areas with the lowest effort that I can feasibly address without having to collaborate outside my organization and introduce a very complex process or project that requires prioritization of resources outside of security? You know, we colloquially call those the low hanging fruit. And I think, you know, you should probably, you know, in what I did when first few months at Providence was I tried to identify what are the low hanging fruit that I can address that are going to very quickly move the needle on risk reduction and then focus on the things that are far more difficult to implement and require resource allocation from other organizations. Because those complex projects you mentioned before, multiple leaders involved, multiple resource chains involved, they become really complex really fast. And in a shaky financial environment for a lot of hospital systems, funding those very complex, very costly projects is a tough pill to swallow for a lot of organizations.
I think that's brilliant. John and Sanjeev, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this concept of, it makes total sense, right? I mean, let's take care of the things that are under our control first and then work out from there. John?
Yeah, I mean, pretty straightforward. Prioritizing the gaps and the level of effort to close them and, work on the ones that produce most benefit, fairly straightforward, but often, common sense isn't common practice. And so it's just a good reminder that, for that discipline.
Yeah. So go ahead. What I would add, is that there is a role that we have in cyber, which is to leverage the safeguards and controls we do have for the current state architecture that are most effective in its posture. Meaning, do you have your tool that protects endpoints configured properly, and is it present and configured properly on the ecosystem that it should be, right? So that is a component of one particular safeguard having right posture by having it more effective. And so Adam's point about ensuring that safeguards are effective in the ways that he described it is critically important. And we shouldn't be giving up on that. We need to, in fact, place emphasis on enhancing those safeguards and making sure they're effective. That's one. Second, cyber strategy can benefit from, reducing attack surface, having simpler architecture to work with. And so when we talk about zero trust architecture, or we talk about application rationalization, what does it really do for us? It provides us with the type of architecture that's easier to protect, the type of platforms and applications that, instead of investing energy and money in tens of things, you can focus your energy and have consistency and effectiveness of the safeguards and controls on one platform, right? So multiple approaches and strategies should be used to do exactly, achieve that benefit. But I really agree with everyone's point that's being made. We shouldn't give up on where we are already present, which is current architecture is current architecture. This is where business functions and operations are being run. And we need to continue to do a job of making sure that current safeguards and controls are at the most effective place it can be while we make other improvements to reduce the risk.
I just want to add one point to that. I think, and I don't think we've mentioned this thus far, but we can't do this alone. Like I mentioned, we're very reliant on third parties in healthcare. There's only so much Sanjeev and I can do from a direct ownership perspective of our systems to secure those systems and architect them in a way that safeguards our environment and the data and the patients that walk through our doors. If our third parties that we do business with aren't adhering to the same practices and procedures and being held to, frankly, the same regulations, then we're always going to have some level of unmitigatable cyber risk in our environment. For example, if I say I am treating privileged access in my environment appropriately at Providence, it only takes one vendor that's not treating privileged access appropriately in their environment to introduce some risk into my ecosystem.
So what do we do about that, Adam? I mean, I know you could do a whole webinar around third party.
How much time do we have, Anthony?
Yeah, third party risk management. And people are frustrated with the questionnaire process. They don't feel like it's really doing anything about risk mitigation, maybe making us feel a little better, but it's not really mitigating any risk.
I agree. And the questions, the answers that we get back to third party risk questionnaires, we oftentimes find were filled out in haste. You know, the relationship with vendors changes over time. Was that questionnaire updated over time as well to reflect the change in that relationship? And, you know, the answer may be yes or it may be no, depending on the vendor and the organization. You know, just speaking really in hyperbole there. But what I'd say is, you know, there's a lot of talk right now about minimum cybersecurity standards for hospital systems, new regulations being put in place for cybersecurity for healthcare delivery organizations. I'm generally not a fan of regulations in general. However, I do think when it comes to minimum cybersecurity safeguards, if the government does pass regulations down to healthcare delivery organizations, those same safeguards and practices need to be applied to everybody in the supply chain. Otherwise, it's not going to be effective.
That's brilliant, and that's really interesting. And we did this whole thing with meaningful use around the EHR vendors. They all had to get stamped, and they were up on a website, right, a government website. And in order to show you were a meaningful user, you had to be using one of them. So, yeah, but the question is, I think the EHR vendors, that's a fairly finite group. You can think of a list, but you're talking about the thousands and thousands of potential vendors. They're having to conform to some sort of minimum standard and get on some kind of, you know, get the stamp. And that takes absolutely a lot off your plate. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, Change Healthcare is not an EHR vendor, but a lot of pharmacy organizations were struggling as a result of Change Healthcare cyber attacks. So yeah, I 100% agree with that. I think there should be some stamp of approval and minimum cybersecurity standards for those supply chain organizations.
Yeah, I would also add, Adam, is that, you know, the regulatory standards, as they come in, they will absolutely help everyone, you know, advance on security posture for themselves. And third party risk is probably the one that we're trying to mitigate, in a lot of our organizations today. But I think also internally, in the current context, I think organizations can do better in terms of third-party risk assessment, third-party risk monitoring and management. Too often, yeah, you know, the industry has had difficult time pushing for the type of safeguards we want in contracts. But you know, in my organizations, where I have had a role in cyber, we put in, you know, minimum contract requirements that put obligations on third parties in a way that gives us an opportunity to also audit and monitor. But it's a huge opportunity. I couldn't agree more with Adam. That's probably where we need to get better as the entire industry and the whole ecosystem if we're to have a decent or good control over cyber threats and cyber exposures in the healthcare industry.
John, anything you want to add based on what you're hearing today?
I have nothing to add. I think it's all very, very good.
John, I would like to ask you before we go to an audience question, any more thoughts on what customers are coming to you for and asking you about? You mentioned possibly reducing some of the times that it takes them to recover. What are the other main things that CIOs and CISOs are want to discuss with you about, you know, when it comes to Pure Storage?
You know, going back to that thread of recovery, and modernizing that, you know, multi-day recovery times are, you know, not acceptable to a modern business. And so even in some traditional, you know, air-gapped solutions, there is, you know, there's latency in getting that data back. So some forward-thinking organizations are starting to want to look at a tiered resiliency architecture from a data perspective where, and like Adam mentioned, making sure that you had, you know, snapshots that are immutable and not deletable on the primary storage array, but then also replicating those to a secondary array in a data center, and then replicating them to you know, alternate data centers. Again, all of them protected from being deleted or changed. So definitely looking at a tiered resiliency architecture. Nothing's faster to recover from a snapshot on the primary array. So that's definitely an area that and these are typically with larger organizations that have, you know, an operational EHR database that's well over 100 terabytes, and it's a math equation, and you need the right technology to recover that. So that's one of particularly within the the resiliency area.
All right, excellent, John. Thank you for that. All right, I want to get a question in from an audience question. Adam, we'll go to you first on the question. What are your thoughts on pulling the information security / cybersecurity team out of IT, perhaps reporting through risk management / operations or directly to the CEO? I wonder whether separating information security from IT would help to balance the focus away from it being IT's responsibility for BCP and other security controls. To add to my question, would divorcing security from IT, would there be the opportunity for a more broad oversight to the many areas of the organization touched by security controls, such as facility, HR, contract, third-party management, IT infrastructure, or applications?
That's a great question, a very loaded question. Yeah, I think, so I report to our CIO, and I've reported to a number of CIOs and CISOs throughout my career who report to CIOs or other people. So I can speak from my personal experience, and I can also speak from knowledge of the industry, in that I think we're seeing a shift in a lot of CISO organizations where they do report up through either operations or risk, or directly in a lot of cases to the CEO, depending on organization and sector they operate within. CIO, though, is the most, I think, common reporting chain that you're seeing these days. And the answer that I would give you is it really depends on who the CIO is, their knowledge and understanding of, frankly, number one, technology, but number two, technology security as a risk domain. And I'm blessed to have a CIO who really gets it. But I know that not everybody has the same level of knowledge and understanding. If you look at CIOs across our industry and then industry agnostic, there is an inherent conflict of interest, I think, between security and general IT, if you're reporting up to the same accountable leader. And how that leader manages that conflict of interest of security being there to mitigate risk is a risk domain, and IT being there to move fast and break things and serve the business. How that leader manages that risk and balances risk versus delivery, which shouldn't be mutually exclusive and don't always have to be mutually exclusive, but oftentimes are. How that leader manages that, I think, depends. It's a very personal thing on their leadership style, how they set strategy for the IT organization and whatnot. I don't know that aligning IT security to the risk organization or to ops or anything else would necessarily lead to better outcomes as it pertains to business continuity and disaster recovery. I think, again, it just depends on the leader, depends on their understanding of cybersecurity as a risk domain and IT risk as a domain of business continuity management and disaster recovery and emergency management. I think there are too many variables to give a black and white yes or no answer on that. So I hope that helps.
Sanjeev, any thoughts?
Yeah, a very insightful question. My response would be that in my experience, I have reported mostly to CIOs and at least once to another executive in my personal experience. And what I would say in terms of achieving security, what is critically important, irrespective of where the security organization or CISO reports to, is to have the kind of stakeholder buy-in and partnership that gives the best possible outcome. There's advantage in reporting into IT organization under CIO, for example. You know, the close partnership that you have with your IT colleagues and IT stakeholders and technology partners gives us a really big advantage in terms of how we're able to affect the changes that we need to make within the technology ecosystem. And there's a deep partnership and history of achieving good results in that model. And I think the question probably gets to where you have a challenge or conflict or have a conflict of interest, as Adam highlighted, in those scenarios, I think you can enable yourself with governance mechanisms, mm-hmm. with executive presence and other forums where, you know, you're properly able to discuss the topics of security without necessarily reporting lines being the differentiating factor in terms of how effective you are as an IT security organization. So that would be my perspective to help our audience, our stakeholders, and anyone listening figure out a way to achieve the consensus that we should achieve from a cybersecurity leadership perspective, and then be able to affect that change in the setup that we may have in our individual organizations.
John, we're almost out of time. I'm going to come to you for the last word. I'll comment on that question. You're the only one who can answer this question without possibly making their boss mad. So as Adam said, it was a loaded question.
No, you
go ahead.
I love the question, and I appreciate Adam's response that it really does depend. But at a high level, I love the idea of taking cyber risk and put it in the context of all business risk. And as an organization tries to prioritize their investments, from a risk-based perspective, seeing all the risk in one pool kind of psychologically seems to be, intellectually honest, as opposed to separating out. And clearly, 10 plus years ago, cyber risk was an IT issue, and it has drifted, closer to a business risk for which the non-IT leaders have a stake in understanding, participating in, and helping figure out how to mitigate the impact. So I love the question.
Awesome. Well, that is about all we had time for today. Excellent conversation, went by so fast. Regarding continuing education, you could use the final slide in this deck. You'll get an email when the on-demand recording is ready for viewing. If you want to work with us, you can reach out to Nancy Wilcox from our team, and you can go to our website to register for upcoming panels. With that, I want to thank our tremendous panel. This was a lot of fun. Adam Zoller, Sanjeev Saw, and John Kimmerly, and Pure Storage for sponsoring and making it possible, and you for attending. And with that, everybody have a wonderful day. Thank you.